Hey, welcome to the Life 2.0 podcast. I'm John St. Augustine. Time to go up the down staircase in the outdoor, make sense out of the senseless, and if at all possible, find the obvious buried in the absurd. Let's get right to it. You know, that's Dirty Deeds Done Dirt Cheap from AC/DC. Everybody kind of paints me off as this guy who just likes, you know, middle of the road pop stuff. Yeah? Yeah? Little AC/DC, never heard anybody that I know of. Put out a little Ozzy Osbourne in that list too for me, if you don't mind. Good Saturday morning to you. I am delighted to have you joining me from anywhere and everywhere around the planet. Let me set the scene in the studio here, the vaunted and highly respected Aurora Media Production Studio. It is 22 degrees outside this morning here in Chicago. I think it feels more like 20, but you know, 2 degrees, what are you going to do either way? This studio that I have in the back of the house doubles as my office because with technology, I don't need to go to a radio station anymore to do the things that I've done for a quarter of a century. Technology allows for a lot of flexibility. So this addition was built, I think, a year or two after the house was built in 1955. It's nice to have things around me that are older than me. But I knew when we first came to this place that this would be a really good space for me to work from. It faces the south and west, but the east, as it comes up, just gets enough light to kind of illuminate the room. And it's great. It's got some bamboo siding in here, which was all the rage back in 1956, and it's got this kind of tug-and-groove ceiling thing going on. We put some big blinds in here, a lot of windows. It's great. And I got all kind of stuff in here, all my knick-knacky stuff, everything from, you know, a 16-inch Chicago clincher softball that's never been used. It's hard as a rock. Anybody that called it softball never caught a Windy City clincher right out of the box. I'm here to tell you. There are more broken knuckles in Chicago, not from bar fights, even though there's been a few of those, but from playing with the Windy City clincher. So I got that sitting here, and I got over on the other side of the wall, I got autographed helmets, Deacon Jones and Jerry Kramer stuff, and all my Batman guys, because I'm a Batman guy, and my whole Coast Guard stuff here, my helmet, pictures, helicopters, you name it. And then I kind of got the horror corner going over on one side where I got this lifelike head of the creature from the Black Lagoon. It is so cool. And my buddy Rich Coe's, Sven Gulli, got some stuff up here. So there's stuff everywhere in here. This time of year, it's cold storage, and I'm not kidding. While it's a great space, I think the insulation rate is about roughly that of a saltine cracker. So I have a heater in here, and it takes a little while to get cranked up. I'm usually up early in the morning, between 4 and 5 o'clock in the morning, so I'd crank it up and turn it on and get the coffee going and do all those other things. So by the time I come in here to work, it is at least, I can't see my breath. That's progress. When I'm working in here and I can see my breath, that's a little bit much. And I think of Peter Benchley, the late great author, Peter Benchley, who wrote Jaws and so many different books and great books, talking in an interview one time when he actually wrote Jaws. He was in an unheated chicken coop somewhere in Pennsylvania over a barn or something. So if Peter Benchley can suffer for his art, I can too. But the reason I bring some of this stuff up is because this time of year, it's obviously cold out. I find it fascinating. You know, here in Chicago, we have, you know, 4 or 5 television channels that all have really highly paid weather people on them, all saying the same thing at the same time. And I think after being alive for 60 plus years, you're able to figure out in January, February, and March, it's probably going to be cold in Chicago. What a gig, huh? Get paid serious cash to tell us what the weather is, even though we already know it. Anyway, I digress a little bit. The other day, it snowed here pretty well, depending on where you're at, between 5 to 8, 9 inches of snow. And that's stopped the presses stuff here in Chicago. Now, in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, where I lived for 20 years, that's a normal day. Nobody cares. Nobody talks about it. It's not the end of the world. Here, of course, it's a different population. You got 9 million people in the greater and lesser Chicagoland area. So it becomes a traffic problem and a transportation problem and all kind of other problems that it doesn't, you know, in the UP, there's more trees than people. So it's a little different deal. However, this was the first year, even though I had a snowblower in the UP, it's mandatory That and a riding lawnmower. I had 3 acres of grass to cut and a driveway about as long as the Nile River. So I needed a serious amount of hardware, and I had that, but I don't need that as much here. Even though I have a long driveway, it was all, you know, shovelable. I can do that. Had a new driveway put in this past summer, and I thought, I ain't shoveling anymore. And we, through some interesting twists and turns, we were bequeathed a small Toro snowblower. I took it in, got new blades on it, and been waiting to use the snowblower. You know, like that's like, let's use the snowblower, right? The shovels can just stay on the porch for the small work, right? But that snowblower, man, I want to go out there and fire that thing up. And, you know, nothing like having machinery laying around that you want to use and you can't, you know? So the lawnmower is put away till next year, obviously. So now I got this other thing I want to use. And so after it had snowed all night, there's, like I said, a good half a foot of snow on the ground. And I went out and fired this thing up. It started like a champ. First pull, bam, brrr, I'm ready to go. And I tolerate the cold pretty well for my advanced age. I don't need a whole lot of clothing on. I think it's one of the reasons I can work out here like this. It really doesn't bother me. I think part of it was being in the service for so many years, those 4, 5, 6 years I was in there. And we worked outside a lot. It was in the Coast Guard. You're always out in the water doing something. And I've never had a real problem with cold. There are some days my joints hurt a little bit more than others, but for the most part, I do pretty well. So I don't need to bundle up, you know, like Admiral Peary out on exploration. It's pretty easy for me, especially when it's, you know, 20 degrees, it's snowed and the snow's not real heavy. It's going to be an enjoyable thing. Well, it was so much fun. I'm snow blowing the driveway. And as soon as I get to the end of the house, I get out into the vortex where the wind's whipping around. Of course, it all ends up on me. And at first, I was shocked. I mean, you get this spray of cold crystals of snow on you, and it's hilarious. It was just so much fun. I'm driving back and forth, and as soon as I hit the end of the driveway at the front of the house, boom, there it was again. And I'm like, oh, just wipe it off. Boom, there it was again. And I got carried away a little bit. I not only did our driveway and sidewalk, and I did the neighbor's driveway and sidewalk, and the other neighbor's driveway and sidewalk, and I'm just looking like the abominable snow guy, right? Because it just piled on me. And as I'm snow blowing my way back to my garage, I just stopped right where I was at. The motor's running. And it's just, I had this flashback to being, I don't know, 9, 10, 11, 12, somewhere in there, where being out in the snow was like the thing you lived for at that age. You know, a snow day from school in Chicago was a rarity, but I was thinking back as I was standing there to 1967, in January of 1967, when we had the great snowfall. I don't know how many inches, 23, 24, 25 inches fell like within a day. And I have memories of that. Snow forts in the front yard. And, you know, you're out there for hours. We didn't have the thermal wear that we have now. So soaked to the bone, frozen to the bone, didn't care. You can't feel your cheeks. When you take a deep breath, your nostrils stick together, man. I mean, that's the kind of stuff you want to do outside. Either that or your nose is just dripping like a sieve, right? And I was standing on the front driveway, just covered in snow, and I started laughing my ass off. And I realized that I haven't had that much fun in the snow for decades. It was just snow blowing. And it was this little tiny thing, right? Everybody's out snow blowing here and there on the road, and the trucks are doing their thing. And I'm standing there feeling, just for a few moments, like I did when I was 10, 11, 12. And all I wanted to do was, you know, come inside, get some chicken noodle soup or maybe a hot cup of cocoa and stand by the vent we had in our house and thaw out. That's what we did. When you're outside for a long time, we had this huge house on Berto Avenue in Chicago, this big Victorian type deal. And in the front hallway, there was this, where right over where the furnace is, there was the intake and this big, massive output grate for the heat on the first floor in the front hallway. Not a really great design, not very fuel efficient, I'm here to tell you, but it was great for warming up. And my sister was small enough, she could actually fit in the little area there and just cook in there like a chicken. But I would take my shoes off and just stand there, and that heat would kick on it. You just like thaw out. And I realized as well that, you know, it's all about focus, right? You know, I've said this on many shows over the years, you know, it's all about perspective. That what you see is what you get. And when you're only 10, 11, 12 years old, even though there's a lot going on in the world that concerned my parents, it didn't concern me in the least. All I want to do is make a snow fort and thaw out and maybe come in and have some hot chocolate, watch the Three Stooges. That was the extent of my consciousness at the time. And that's not a bad thing either. Some days I feel like doing that now. And it was this little tiny thing. And I had forgotten how important sometimes little things like that can be. I get so busy. I'm not going to do the wee thing. You can figure that out for yourself. I get so busy and so tied up in projects. By the end of the day, I just, I'm done. I'm toast. So if I'm not working on stuff for an event that's upcoming, I'm working on audiobook projects for clients. I'm working on print book projects for clients. I'm working on podcast projects for clients. That's all well and good. I'm very grateful to have all that after doing this for so long that these people seek me out and they want to do stuff and I get a chance to say yay or nay and it's great. But there's got to be room to be covered in snow at some point. There just has to be. And I had forgotten what that was like. And then, of course, it trips off a whole slew of other memories from this time of year. I lived right around the corner from Belding Grammar School in Chicago. Literally, three houses down, make a left, it's right there. And there was this massive playground attached to the grammar school, as many did back in the day. And it had this huge field house to kind of split the space in two. I would guess it was probably as long as, maybe it was 100 yards long, maybe a little longer, 125 yards long. And on the front part of it, nearer to the school, was all the swings and the, slides and horseshoe pits and all the cool stuff, the monkey bars, the merry-go-round, all that stuff was in the front part. Then there was the field house, and on the back side of the field house, which was closer to where I lived, was just an open slab of asphalt. That's where we played football and softball with the aforementioned Windy City clincher. And at this time of year, that would be frozen solid. It'd be a skating rink. And back then, again, let's go back to the 67, 68, 69 years, the people that worked at the park were like, in my opinion, were like extended family. You were there every day. These people, you knew them and they knew you. They were these, authority figures. Mr. Ted Atchison was the head guy and, the silver-haired, dashing-looking man with it seemed like he was always tan, and he was Mr. Ted Atchison. And then Miss Winnie, was the woman who was in charge of the girls, and that field house was split in half, boys on one side, girls on the other. Low to anyone who crossed over to the other gender. You never knew if they'd ever come back. You know what I'm saying? Field house was split right down the middle. Mr. Atch had his desk on one side. Miss Winnegar had her desk on the other side. And in the back of that, there was like a little office area there. Behind that little area, they had coffee and stuff. They do their thing. There was also a record player back there. So when the asphalt was frozen, the softball / football diamond was frozen, there was this battered to shit speaker stuck on a pole behind the field house. And Mr. Atch would go in and put these, he only had like four polka records. That's all they ever played was polka records. And he would drop the needle on, Myron Florin and his favorites, and the whole neighborhood would hear polka music for hours in the winter. I can remember vividly sitting home and having dinner. I'm sure one of my mom's Swedish dishes. She used to make this thing like salmon in gravy with peas over mashed potatoes and tell me it was this big Swedish dish. About gagged me to death. It was just the worst stuff on the planet. But anyway, we'd sit there and work our way through this stuff, and you could hear the polka music in the background. And that was like Pied Piper for the kids. We want to go ice skating. So there were times where we would put our skates on at home. My sister and I put our skates on at home, and we would tiptoe on the blades, the tips of our blades, the block and a half down, click, 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 and go across the street and go in and start skating right off the street. And, you could go there and walk over and put them in and inside the field house and warm up and stuff like that. But there was just something about all that I was doing the other day with that snow covering me that took all this memories and shoved them right up in my face again. You'd go around and around in a circle on that skating rink. It's probably the temperature it is now. Didn't feel it at all. As a kid, you don't feel that cold. Especially when it was at night and the overhead lights were on and the ice was just glimmering and shimmering like a mirror. And the snow would always be pushed up to create the oval What was the best thing in the world to do? Well, it was one of two things. One is you go as fast as you can across the ice and then launch yourself through the stratosphere into a snowbank. Bam! Covering it. Like I was snowblowing. Or somebody's at the other end down there, unsuspecting, and you launch yourself same way and you knock them and take them in with you, man. So all of that came out of the fact that I was snowblowing. I actually literally came back, turned the snowblower off, and sat on the back porch just for a couple minutes thinking about how much I complain when it snows or the traffic or things. And somewhere in the world, especially here in this area, some kid at 9 or 10 is going, this is the best thing in the world. It's all about perspective. My mom used to say that I would be up at the crack of dawn when I was a kid. I don't know why this is for me. I must have brought in some ancient alarm that's, you know, inside me. I wake up early and it's just the way it is. And I'm all good with it. My mom used to say that you're always up at the crack of dawn. And I always imagined crack of dawn as this imagined place. Like it wasn't a real place. And yet this morning when I was up at the crack of dawn, and I've had this experience before, but it was profound this morning because it was very clear out. Pitch dark at 4:15, of course, and I walk out here and, you know, get my fire stoked up and get things going, and I happen to peer out the back window of my studio, and between the crotch of the tree in the neighbor's yard, in that crook there, I could see the stars shining so bright, and I knew it was cold out. It was just this sacred moment at the crack of dawn, because on the horizon, it was just starting to get light. You know, whenever I do these podcasts, I've always said this, not so much in radio, because radio was a job for me. It's a career where I was paid to go in and sit in doing a shift, for example, from noon to 3 or 9 to noon or whatever, WGN or wherever. But these podcasts are a little bit different. I never want to turn this microphone on and just bloviate and speculate and verbally defecate just because there's a microphone in front of me. Something needs to trip my trigger in order to sit down and, feel like I'd have something to share with you that may have some value outside of the headlines. It'd be easy. And most podcasts that I've worked on and helped people start, all they want to do is talk about what's going on in the headlines, and their rebuttal to them doesn't change the headlines. I'd rather talk about the lifelines. And a simple thing like snow blowing and getting covered with snow was a lifeline for me back to another time. And so it trips my trigger to start looking for other things, or at least being on alert for other things that do the very same thing in the 21st century. And I realized as I, you know, walk in my studio every day, everything in this room, everything, every picture, every knickknack, every baseball, even the creature from the Black Lagoon, all of it is an anchor for me to remember a different time. And at least for a moment, when I look at this certain thing, it takes me away from the chaos that gets downloaded in my brain doing so much audio work. I call it TMS, turbulent mind syndrome, where it's too easy to get wrapped up in this stuff. It's like when you went to the cotton candy vendor as a kid, you know, if you went to the state fair like that, and they take that tube and they stick it in there, start swirling it around, and more gets attracted to it. More, and pretty soon you got this giant glob of cotton candy, which I can't stand. But that's the whole thing. And you wake up every day and your mind is clear and clean from sleep. And pretty soon you start turning on the television and listening to the news or the radio or read the newspaper or go online and look at what's going on, and starts getting wrapped up and wrapped up and wrapped up and wrapped up. And pretty soon you can't remember even why you got out of bed that day. What's the point of being here? And yet the fact of the matter is that the odds of being born are 1 in 400 trillion. And the odds of dying are 1 in 1. So what you do with the opportunity when you get here as 1 out of 400 trillion, and what you do with all of this time you're given, however that might be, how long or short it might be, knowing there's a one-on-one deal hanging here, that's, to me, a lifeline. That's what you focus on. At least it is for me. So I find myself more and more reaching for things that keep me from getting too wrapped up in the stuff I can't do a damn thing about. Tomorrow, I have this radio show. We're into a month. I'm very excited about this. This is a radio show. This is something I got to do in a timed fashion. I can't just rant and rave and ramble. this is a radio show that opportunity came my way. I did this bridge program for a year, and every day I was on the radio with two co-hosts from Beijing, China. It was a huge cultural exchange experiment. I learned a lot from these folks and with these folks, and I miss talking to them, quite frankly, because that's where understanding comes from, conversation. I may not agree with everything they do, and they don't agree with everything I do, but there's an understanding. There's a little bit of respect to have those conversations. Did that for a year, kind of let it go. So WCRW 1190 AM in Washington, D.C. is where that show originated. Got 7 million people in that audience out there. And my friend Dan the Man Mason, who is the guru of all that and the architect of all that, approached me and said, hey, you want to do a show? And I said, I do want a show, but I don't want to talk as much anymore. I've been talking for 25 friggin' years. Some of it's good, some of it, meh, I mean, not so much. But I've been enamored with music my whole life. And it all came out of growing up with parents who had more vinyl than they could probably afford, but who didn't, right? And so the show I created called The Tao of Music is based on a lot of that, but it's also based on this Facebook thing I did for a decade called Sacred Sunday Songs, where I would take music and talk about what was going on behind the scenes and the stories and the artists and things like that. And I'm fascinated with the journey people are on, especially artists, musicians, things like these amazing, incredibly talented human beings we share the planet with. And so that's how this all started. So I'm a month into it. And tomorrow you can hear that at 10 a.m. Central Time. It's 11 Eastern, 10 Central, 9 Mountain, and 8 Pacific. I believe I got them all covered there. And if you're not in Washington, D.C., you can listen to it at newworldradio.com and just click the Listen Live button. In radio, we repeat everything twice when we promote it, newworldradio.com. Click Listen Live at 10 o'clock Central Time tomorrow, and you can hear a different side of what I do on the radio, which is this music stuff, which I'm having a lot of fun with. But the reason I even bring that up, A, to promote it, and B, because I have in possession a Grundig stereo. I shouldn't say a Grundig, the Grundig stereo that my folks gifted each other when they got married in 1958. It was a big purchase for them. I think it was about $125. And that is the first stereo that I ever heard music on that I can recall. And, you know, then after, I think they had that from 58 to probably to around 68. And then they really upgraded. They went to Sears, which was, you know, the Amazon of its time. They bought this 14, 15, 100-foot long, I don't know what it was, pressed wood record cabinet that weighed 1,000 pounds, and they shoved all their vinyl in there, and they bought a hi-fi stereo, man, on top, with separate speakers. It was a big frickin' deal. So the Grundig got regulated to the basement, the same basement that we used as a haunted house, and I would go down on Saturday mornings and get the, what was that thing called? Like the creepy crawler maker, whatever it was, you know, you pour the gobbledygook in there, you make insects and stuff. Anyway, it was a multi-purpose basement, and the Grundig sat down there for decades. There was a fire in, I think, like 1999, somewhere in there, and my dad had to move out of the house, and a lot of things got pulled out and were supposed to be refurbished, I think. And the Grundig got taken out, but I don't think it was ever touched since. It's been sitting in my sister's attic since 1999. So she called me before Christmas and said, hey, what do you want to do with this thing? I need some room here doing this stuff. Oh, I'll take it. And as soon as I looked at it, it fell in line with everything else I have in my studio. It was a reminder, an anchor of a different time in my life, and a lot of fun. And so I hauled it out, and it's been sitting in my garage for 4 months, somewhere in there. And yesterday I said, that's, you know, it's getting cold, it's damp. And I, you know, the thing, the power cord is cut off. The rest of it's in rough condition, but okay. So I bring it into my studio to thaw it out. And I started cleaning on it, cleaning up a little bit here and there, doing a little of this, a little of that. And I've kind of come to the conclusion, I probably won't even try to get the thing fixed. I've looked around for restorers and things like that. If I can find another power cord, maybe I'll make a run at it. Looking at it this morning, I walk in here and it's all shined and cleaned up. And I thought, it's 1968 all over again. And I guess the gist of this little rant this morning is about how important it is and should be for us to have those anchors to other times in our life that were less complicated, more simple, more vibrant, maybe less busy, and how the energy from those memories can sustain us through the shitstorm that we live in these days. And I say this with all due perspective, meaning I really don't think overall that the world's any worse than it's ever been. I think that the outlets that there are, which are far too many to count, keep showing us a world that we've never seen before over and over again, nooks and crannies of people's lives that we would have never been involved with before. When I check my Yahoo mail in the morning and I see a slew of stories about celebrities who lost weight or got boob implants or what, I don't care. We've never heard of that stuff before. Now it's all ingested at some point just in the natural course of the day. And that stuff sticks to us. So for me, the antidote for that, to the erosion of all that stuff, is to surround myself with stuff that reminds me of different times or connections in my life. It is the counterbalance. It's the counterweight to all of that. So I'm sitting just a couple of feet away from this Grundig. And again, I don't think it'll ever run, but I got some plans for it. I don't have a whole lot of room left here. I'm going to figure out a way to shove it in a corner. So that way, when I walk in here, it falls in line with the creature from the Black Lagoon. And it falls in line with this picture of my son dunking a basketball, you know, when he was in high school. And it falls in line with this picture of myself in boot camp. And it falls in line with the helmet I wore in high school. And it falls in line with all my Batman guys. And as I get ready to wrap up this Saturday morning rant, because that's really what it is, you know, there may be some salient points made in this 28 minutes, or maybe not. That's for you to decide. I figured this out a long time ago. I kind of remember the guy's name, Michael Uslan. Yeah. He wrote a book called The Boy Who Loved Batman. And I had Michael on my show at WGN a decade ago, if not a little bit longer. And he's the guy, for all the Batman movies you see, he's the guy that's responsible for that. The Batman franchise was nothing after, you know, it was on TV in 1966, and that was kind of about it. He loved the cartoons. He loved the comic strip. He loved the concept of Batman. Wanted to bring it to the big screen. Mortgaged everything to the hilt. The usual story about lost everything to do it. And he's doing just fine now, I'm here to tell you. But at one point, he made a really important point to me because he asked me a question. He said, John, what do you think Batman's superpower is? He says, think about it. Superman flies around. He's Superman. And then you have, you know, all these other, the Hulk, who is morphed from radiation and it becomes the Hulk. And then you go right down the list. For the most part, you know, Peter Parker, the Spider-Man, got bit by a spider so he can do all this. All these superheroes, Wonder Woman's got her lasso of truth. They all have these superpowers. But Batman is just a guy. What do you think his superpower is? And he had me on that one. I'm like, well, I've never really even thought of that. And after a little bit of discussion on the air, he says, think about it. Batman's greatest superpower is empathy. And I said, well, what do you mean? He goes, listen, his parents were killed in front of him. That's what started all this. If you don't think about the Batman storyline, that's where it all started. And out of that came his quest to rid the streets of Gotham of criminals. But he didn't have superpowers. He wasn't bitten by a spider. He didn't come from another planet. He wasn't, you know, under radiation. He was just a guy who wanted to make things better. And so he had the resources in the storyline to do all this amazing, you know, create this stuff, all these cool, the Batarang, the Batmobile, the Batcycle, the Batcopter. You got the whole drill. He said it was his empathy for people who were in difficulty, who were, had loss. He could connect with them and he wanted to defend that. So one of the reasons, if not the reason, that I have so much Batman stuff over here, I got some really good ones. I got the Batmobile and a couple really cool Batman figurines, is not because I just want to feel like I'm a 10-year-old when I walk in here some days, which is not a bad thing, but to remind myself to have empathy for people, that we're all up shit creek, every one of us at some point. Doesn't mean I cut people slack when they act like a, you know, whatever. But I try to understand the best I can where they're coming from, which goes back to this concept of building bridges between people instead of digging ditches between us. There's enough of that. So if nothing else this morning, remember the good things because they're still there. It could be as simple as a Windy City clincher. It could be a picture, or it could be going out on a morning like today, taking a deep breath and your nostrils freeze together. Thanks for listening. Be well. Until next time, safe travels. Adios.